Welcome to the Red Rain Podcast. Here is your host from Revenge of the Birds, Walter Mitchell.
Thank you, Kyle Little Rock Ledbetter from Slam Diego, now living, of course, in the Sacramento area, NoCal, where he works, does production for a number of the teams right now. His Sacramento Kings are cruising along, and he's written about the San Antonio Spurs, if you want to buy his book. And he's got the Oakland A's coming up, my favorite baseball team. We can go there another time. So today we've got a special guest, our cousin from Boston, Paul Bucher, which means we're being sponsored today by Sam Adams, as always. Paul has great insight on the Patriots, so I wanted to bring him in to speak with Kyle and me about what he thinks the Patriots are going to do at number three, and discuss the various scenarios. So, Paul, how are you today?
I'm doing all right. Yourself, Walter?
Good. You know, good. What's your take on the Patriots in free agency thus far?
Honestly, I'm happy with it. I'm glad they were able to sign most of their own free agents. You know what I'm saying? Haven't made that big dip yet, but Onwenu is big, and he was my favorite signing so far. You know, that as we know, their line was awful last year.
Right.
Still a lot of work to be done, but my favorite thing so far was not signing Ridley, though, because that contract that was asinine. He's not a number one receiver, and they're paying him, you know, top six or seven money.
Yeah, good call on that. Dodged a bullet there.
Yeah, big time.
Kind of surprised they were even interested in him, but
he got lucky. I mean, he's the number one guy on a very weak free agent class this year.
Yeah, it is. But it doesn't matter because the draft is so deep in wide receivers that, you know, I'm surprised that people are getting. I mean, Keenan Allen just got traded for a fourth round pick. I mean, to the Bears.
I mean, seriously. I mean, yeah.
I mean, but that's the going rate now because the draft is so deep at wide receiver.
Right.
And, you know,
right.
If you trade one of your top wide receivers and pick up the salaries, you know, you're not going to get much. So it's not a good year for trading wide receivers, put it that way.
No, I mean, they were so far over the cap. They're lucky they were able to keep who they kept so far, you know?
Right.
Yep. You know, they got rid of both. I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, they got rid of both their top receivers, but brought back their two, brought back Bosa and Mack. But they're a little. You can see the writing on the wall with them. I mean, they got to take a receiver at number five.
Right, I think that's going to happen, and they'll get one of the top three. And I think all three, you can make a case for all three in their different styles. How would you rank them, Paul? Where would you rank them with Harrison, Adunze, and Neighbors?
Harrison has to be number one. I think he's just the safest bet, you know? But I like Adunze a little bit better than I like Neighbors. I think he's, I don't know. He's got something, man. He's so under the radar. You talk about him. I talk about him all the time, and everybody asks me, who's that? Who's that?
Right.
You know, he's going to be a stud.
He's got the dog in him. And boy, does he go up and get catches.
Absolutely.
His contested catch rate last year, Paul, was 75%. I mean, who does that, right?
That's incredible.
Well, plus, and he jumped a 40 vertical at the combine. That's no wonder. I mean, he ran well. He's not a blazer, but he's slippery.
Absolutely. And,
I think he wins over the middle, too, when you want him to. Yeah, he's a dog. You know, and Harrison and Neighbors' contested catch rates were under 50%, which is interesting. And
it is.
You know, that's the one thing that my concern about Harrison is I wonder if he'll ever translate into anyone who's going to go over the middle and make catches for you. Because he really looked tentative against Michigan.
That's where that's where it's turning to now. You got to be able to go over the middle now. You know it.
Yep.
So much tentativeness in the league with that. I mean, everybody's afraid to take the hit.
Right.
You know.
Except those San Francisco 49ers dudes.
Right.
All of them are ballers, and I think they've kind of revolutionized the modern day wide receiver in the NFL. Because they stack them, and all of them. Ayuk goes over the middle. Mm-hmm. And then you got Kittle roaming the middle too with Debo, mm-hmm. and the kid Jennings that they picked up, who was, you know, had some good moments for them.
I love Debo. Love him.
Yeah.
He comes from, you know, he's out of the backfield, he's in the slot, he's out wide, he's love a versatile receiver like that.
Right. And then McCaffrey is always an option from the slot. I mean,
he's unreal.
He people don't realize this, but he would be, if he played slot receiver full time, he'd be top two or three in the NFL.
Oh, absolutely.
Yep. And that was the argument I made for I wanted the Cardinals to draft him back when he was in the draft, because people say, no, you don't draft a running back that high. And I say, he's not just a running back.
Mm-hmm.
It's a gifted receiver. And
right. Yeah.
So, and hey, boy, what a difference he's made on that team. Ever since he arrived, they barely lose.
Right. I think Bijan is the same type of guy. He hasn't proven it yet, but I think with a little bit more time, he'll start to show the same qualities.
Yeah. That Atlanta team is going to be interesting to watch. But how would you, I'm going to shock you. Maybe not, because you and I have talked about J.J. McCarthy, but if I were ranking these quarterbacks, I have J.J. McCarthy number one. And the reason why I have number one is I think in the NFL, you win with mental toughness at the quarterback position. And I think he's as mentally tough as any, you know, quarterback in that draft. And not to take anything away from the other top guys, but in pressure situations and just in doing what it takes to win football games, he's not flashy like the others. And of course, he comes out of a run first offense. But in today's football, too, I mean, a lot of the teams want to do that. That's what the Cardinals are trying to do. They've got a Stefanski-style offense now. It's running out of 12 and 13 personnel with two and three tight ends. And they're running the ball big time with James Conner and to set up play action. And they've got Kyler under center now so that he can, you know, disguise the football on play actions. And you know, when teams are really trying to, you know, emphasize the run now, I mean, you really need mentally tough quarterbacks, because it's not like the old days where you could get in a rhythm throwing. You remember that game where Charlie Weiss called 19 pass plays in a row for Brady?
I do remember that. Absolutely.
I mean, we won't see that again for a while. I mean, we don't have that kind of offense going in the NFL anymore. Right. But, you know, and Kurt Warner was always like, just let me throw the ball till I get in a rhythm, and then we'll run the ball. But, you know, I think it takes a mentally tough quarterback to be able to, like, if you run it on first down for 4 yards and you run it on second down for 3 yards and now it's third and three, pressure's on, you have to convert.
Absolutely.
You know, and I just love the way J.J. McCarthy, you know, uses his mental toughness to win games. And, you know, is he as gifted a thrower? Maybe not, but he's not bad either. And he's got deceptive feet. I mean, he can run.
Right. I'm going to surprise you, maybe, and say that I think I agree with you 100%. I really do. The more and more I watch him and read about him, and you know, the, all this, he can make the throws. Like you said, he that offense was not geared to show him off. It was
right.
You know, he was a, you know, he was a facilitator. He wasn't, you know, he can make the throws. He can run. He can. I don't know. I think he's going to be the steal of the draft, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I think he's
NFL. I've been talking with my uncle about him all week, and we both love him. He's gonna show some people some stuff that passed on him. I'll tell you that.
Would you take him at 3 for the Pats?
Probably not, because I think you can drop back a little bit and still get him.
Yep. So trade back a few spots and still get him.
Right, but I think if you couldn't make a, if there was no trading in the NFL, I would take him.
Yeah, yeah,
I would. I mean, I'm not a Caleb Williams fan at all. Great player. I just, he's not for me. You know, I have some attitude concerns.
Yeah,
you know.
Yep.
We shall see, but I have a lot of concerns with him. And my second favorite quarterback would be Daniels, but I think Washington is going to take him. I think for sure they're going to take him.
Yep.
So we shall see.
Caleb won. So let's do the board right now. Let's say it goes as you're predicting, which I think is a good prediction. So Caleb won.
Caleb's going to go one.
Daniels goes 2 to Washington.
Yeah, if the Patriots stand pat, they're going to take a quarterback. They're going to take May.
They'll take May?
Take May. As much as I'd love to see him take Harrison, because I'm a big... I want the sure thing. I think Harrison's more of a sure thing than May or Daniels. I want that stud. Right. I think he's going to be a stud.
Right. Yeah.
And then the Cardinals... Really,
to see the Cardinals
are going to end up with their guy.
Right. I don't know. Something about the Pats and Michigan quarterbacks.
I'd be happy if they dropped down 7, 8, 9, whatever, and picked up something else and took them. I'd be happy with that.
Right. Yep. And grab another draft pick.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Especially because we just have the news coming in that a team is finally trying to trade up to go get a quarterback, because the Vikings just gave up 2 seconds to move back into the first round. So they have 2 firsts now, and they're going to be quarterback hunting.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
If they offer those 2 first-round picks to come up, I mean, would you take that, Paul? I mean, they're at 11, and I think, what was it, Kyle? Did they 23.
Got the 23rd?
Yeah.
23.
11 and 23? I don't know what the math breakdown is. They have that conversion chart that they use. You know, I'm sure maybe another 4th or 5th gets tossed in or something and make it work out. But I would do that, you know.
Yeah.
If I knew that McCarthy was most likely going to be there, absolutely.
Right. Yep.
Can I ask you a question real quick? What do you think about Atlanta making the move? The quarterback.
With Cousins?
Cousins, yeah.
I think it's risky, but... You know, he's coming off, he's older, he's coming off an Achilles.
Yep.
But I think that if he's, you know, the Cousins that we're accustomed to seeing with those weapons around him, I mean, they're loaded. I mean, the Cardinals just traded Rondale Moore there to get Desmond Ridder, which we'll talk about in a minute. But I mean, Rondale Moore isn't even going to see the football. I mean, now Drake London. Pitts at tight end.
Bijan
out of the backfield. you know, they've got an array of talent, and
absolutely,
you know, we'll see what they can do with that. But and then you've got Raheem Morris, who I love as a coach.
Love him.
Yep. And so he'll get that defense. I mean, what he did with L.A. last year, because and playing basically one super stud,
mm-hmm.
and all draft picks, most of them day three draft.
Right,
picks.
Right.
And he had them competent enough to, you know, be in the playoffs,
mm-hmm.
or make a playoff push.
No, he's a great coach. I love him.
Yep.
Liked him for years.
Yeah.
Great player.
They're in good shape. How about the Texans in 1 year?
Wow. Have they made some splashes, huh? Wow.
Oh, my God.
Spending that money.
I mean, to go from, you know, talk about rags to riches overnight.
I think Danielle Hunter might be my favorite signing of the offseason so far for any team.
Right. And opposite Will Anderson Jr. Are you kidding me?
Right.
Yeah. And
they're already up and coming. I'm very interested to see to watch them this year.
And look at what Stroud did as a rookie. I mean, wow. Did you see that coming?
No, not from a mile away. No.
Right.
I thought he'd be a good quarterback, but he was great. Top. I mean, was he top three or four in the conference? Probably.
Well, at the end, he certainly was.
Right, right.
I mean, in the playoffs, he was dealing.
Absolutely. I mean, I love what they're doing now. I love what they're doing now.
And their wide receiver situation now is mint.
Yes.
I mean, they'll get Tank Dell back, who I thought was on track for Rookie of the Year.
Oh, I love I played Tank so much in my fantasy this year. Oh, he won me a few dollars this year.
Cha-ching.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tank was awesome. And then, you know, I love Nico Collins.
Oh, straight under the radar type guy. Nobody knows about him either.
Yeah. And who did they just trade for Ayuk or something? Who did they trade for?
Oh, geez. No, it's not Ayuk. It's
they added a good receiver in there. I was like surprised. Wow, how did they get him? Kyle, do you know who did they trade for?
I think you're thinking of Mixon, Joe Mixon.
Well, yeah, they got him. And then I'm pretty sure they added a wide receiver.
No, they re-signed Noah Brown, but Mixon was the big skill position player that they had. Okay. Right. Most of their other signings are defense.
Yeah, okay.
They re-signed Dalton Schultz.
That's big. He's a good player. Yeah.
Excellent tight end.
Yep.
Dallas would love to have him back.
Yeah, they would. Now, let's just say it goes like this. So if you're predicting the Patriots staying at three, they'll take May, right?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, let's get your assessment of Drake May.
Can make all the throws.
Yeah.
He's not a – he can run. I mean, look at – what, he had almost 500 yards rushing this past year. He can get out of the pocket.
Right.
He can make the easy throws, no problem. But I really think he has trouble with the downfield stuff, like the 20 to 30-yard type stuff. He's not as – you know, locked in on as he is, you know, the dink and dunk type stuff, but he can make the throws. I think he needs some work, but good quarterback, I think, you know, like a solid starter is my prediction for him. I don't think he's going to be a stud. I don't think he's going to be a bust. I think he'll be a solid player. I need to see more of him. I didn't see a lot of him at North Carolina. I didn't see too much Carolina, you know, on the TV this year. So,
right.
I only watched one game this year.
Yeah, I wanted to watch him just for curiosity because I really loved what he put on tape in 2022. And I was thinking he could be the number one quarterback in the draft, so I was tuning in. Here's what I saw. Very erratic from game to game and very flustered.
Yeah, that was what I was going to say. He gets spooked in the pocket. You know, doesn't have that stand in and delivery. He gets scared quick.
Yeah, he does. He's got happy feet there.
Yep.
And then just so many occasions where he'd like overthrow on a third down and just come pouting to the sideline and like waiting, wanting to throw his helmet into the bench. I just thought his body language and his just expressions for his teammates was not captain-esque. You know,
yes.
At some point you got to be up for them. And I sure the weight of the world was on his shoulders, knowing what was at stake for him in the upcoming draft. So, you know, I can get that to a certain degree. And I think that also affected Caleb Williams some. But, you know, I I don't know if you know who Brett Coleman is, but he's a guru on the internet now for doing draft breakdowns.
Yeah.
And he was saying the other day, he was like, I'm watching Drake May and he's just like playing pissed.
Yes.
But not in a good way.
Right.
Like in a bad way. And
great size. He's got great size. He's got a great arm. But like you said, the happy feet. His stats took a big hit this year. He wasn't as good this past year as he was the year before. That concerns me a little. But another thing that concerns me a lot about him is what you just said. We already have that. We just had one of those guys on the Patriots. You know, his name is Mac Jones. You know, he came in and he'd throw his helmet. He'd yell at this guy. It was everybody else's fault.
Right. Yeah, so that's worries me too. That's why, if I had the choice on at the Patriots, I don't think you get. I think with J.J. McCarthy, you get better focus, a better command of a game plan, better preparation, and smarter play. Now, I think May has a better arm, to tell you the truth, than McCarthy, although McCarthy can sling it too. But May can throw lasers. I mean, he is
right.
he can dial that in.
I like that McCarthy. I'm sorry. I think he has the ability. He has the ability to create. You know, from outside the pocket. You know, he's got you know, decent quickness, agility. You know, he's got above average accuracy, I'd say. But I love that he can throw on the run. He can get outside. You know, not a statue. We've had too many of those here in New England.
Right.
I like him a lot.
Yeah. I'm wondering too if Bo Nix will be the next Brock Purdy.
Yeah. Bo Nix. I loved him last year. I didn't get to see him a lot this past year.
Yep.
I mean, I liked what I saw from him. Decent size, very good athlete. Create outside the pocket, he can run. Good arm strength, you know. I think Oregon didn't ask a lot of him as like very simple offense, I would say there. Not as simple, but not as complicated as other offenses that were running the country. I think he's got footwork issues as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Kid's accurate. I mean, his accuracy was phenomenal. I mean, 80%. And they weren't all just bubble screens and all like that, you know?
Right, right.
Some of it was, but, and man, they won.
He's incomplete right now, but I think his tools are there to succeed for sure.
What's your take on Michael Penix?
Penix, I like him. I'll tell you what, but his multiple season-ending, you know, knee and shoulder, you know, injuries, very risky, I think, you know.
Right.
Like, he's hurt a lot. Good player when he's in there. A lot of teams don't like the lefty quarterback.
Right.
You know. He's kind of a wild card, if you ask me. I mean, he can stay healthy. I think he can be serviceable, but that's a big if. I mean, he was hurt a ton.
If he gets in a vertical passing offense,
right,
I think that's his game.
Absolutely, he can make that throw. He can make the two throw
as well as anyone I've seen in recent years. Mm-hmm. So, but how many teams have that today? Well, everybody has a component of it, but it's dialed back now. But hey, he with Jalen Polk McMillan, his two slot guys, he fed him really well. I mean, Polk had over 1,000 yards, and McMillan was injured for a while, and he came back. And he was very effective. He's a good player. Someone's going to get a steal on him probably day three.
I think someone could take a flyer on him a little earlier even, but, you know, he's got a great arm. I'll give him that. He can – great deep ball accuracy, like you said. The injury history really worries me a lot, you know. Quite a bit, actually, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's a little bit inconsistent, in the intermediate area. He's great on the deep ball, but sometimes he, you know, seems to be a little inconsistent over the middle, the 10 to 20 yard range for some reason, but he can work that out, I think. If he stays healthy, he could be a steal for someone.
Yep. I agree. Yep. So now I want to shift gears to the Cardinals at 4. So let's say so far with the picks we've made, it's Williams, Daniels, and May. Mm-hmm. Now you're the Cardinals at 4. You jump right on Marvin Harrison Jr., right?
How do you not? They just lost Hollywood Brown as well.
Yep.
Last year, right?
Yep.
They lost him. That was last year, right?
She just signed with the Chiefs.
Chiefs, that's right. Yeah.
Right. So, and he had two injury riddled seasons with the Cardinals.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, Cardinal fans would be over the moon if they took Marvin Harrison Jr. So, mm-hmm.
You happy with your quarterback?
Kyler?
Yeah.
The thing I would like to see the team do is I thought the more they embrace the 12 and 13 personnel with Trey mm-hmm. McBride mm-hmm. emerging as Kyler's go-to guy.
What a great year he had.
Right. I mean, that's why I'm more fascinated as a system fit with Brock Bowers going opposite McBride in that offense. If you're playing mm-hmm. three tight ends and you got a Bowers on one side and McBride on the other, it's a coverage nightmare.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, what do you do? how do you cover? You're not going to cover them with linebackers.
No, right? You can't. You can't cover them with linebackers. I mean,
you have to pull safety down. Safety's down, right?
Right. Plus, I mean, he's just a big receiver. I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah. He is. Exactly. That's my point, too. It's like, oh, you can't draft a tight end that high. Bowers is an all-purpose receiver who can also block.
A little undersized for, you know, the wide tight end type standard, you know.
Correct. So. But, boy, talk about the dog in the fight.
Right.
The size of the dog in the fight.
Absolutely. Oh, that's so explosive.
And he doesn't go down for anything. I mean, he just he's like James Conner of tight ends. I mean, the Christian McCaffrey of tight ends. I mean, he's going to fight for every yard. And he's such a baller. The only thing I'm worried about with Marvin Harrison Jr. is, will it get us away from what we were doing well? Because there's going to be, you're going to want to mm-hmm. feed him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't ignore him.
No.
So, you know, but, and then I'd feel better about it if he were like Larry Fitzgerald when he came into the NFL was kind of shy going over the middle. until Kurt Warner and one of the coaches, Todd Haley, who was off coordinator at the time, impressed upon Fitz that, look, you're 6'3", you're strong as an ox, you've got all this power in you, you can be a dog coming over the middle. And they got it out of Larry, and then once he got it, I mean, he was a dog his whole career, you know?
Absolutely.
I'm not sure Marvin Harrison Jr. is built that way or is mentally that way.
Mm-hmm.
But
I think you're right. I don't think he is.
Right. And so I'm just, you know, if that's the case, you got to kind of just try to win with him on the perimeter, mm-hmm. which I think, you know, obviously at times you're going to be able to do, or win with him on cross field crossers and, you know, sideline routes.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it limits kind of, or it might detract from what we're trying to do offensively in wanting to. That's why I was happy that Hollywood signed with the Chiefs, because I thought it'd be impossible for Kyler to want to feed his best friend Hollywood Brown.
Mm-hmm.
And if they drafted Harrison, now you got to feed him. And now where is your 12 and 13 personnel? You know, and the emphasis on that, what does that do to that chemistry and equation that was working so well down the stretch last year? That's
it all, but ends it.
You know, like when Hopkins was here, Paul, he demanded the football from Kyler.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he had a 1,400 yard season the first year he got here, but he also had like 200 targets. We were throwing at him left and right, you know?
Right.
And at times to the detriment of the team, because it can't be that lopsided, you know? And when, you know, our only trip to a Super Bowl, when Larry Fitzgerald would complain to Kurt Warner, he'd tell him to go screw. He said, I'm going to throw to the guy who's open. And if it's you, Larry, you're be ready. But we're not going to just, you know, throw at one guy all the time. And
just for the sake of throwing at him.
Yep. So, but yeah, I mean, Cardinal fans would be over the moon. I mean, I'd be excited. I mean, Marvin Harrison Jr., my goodness. I mean, look at the pedigree.
Pedigree, yeah.
You know, I just want to feel like he's a fit. Now, let me ask you this. Do you think his approach to this pre-draft process has been okay, or does it kind of
rubs me the wrong way a little bit?
Right.
You know, I mean, I want to show everybody. I would say I want to show everybody that I'm all in. I'm ready to go to work. You know, not just that I've already achieved, you know, my status. I'm good. I'm as good as I'm going to be right now. I want to keep getting better and show everybody this. You know, I'm going to come to work. I'm going to do my job and keep getting better. I think I think NIL money has really screwed these kids up.
Yeah.
It's almost like they're, God, it's so brutal. It's like the money, it's like they're owed the money now. Like they don't have to prove themselves. You know what I mean? It's
right.
Ridiculous.
Right. And then conversely, at the combine, you have a guy like Adunze, who's like the last guy on the field. He crushed the combine.
Right.
I mean, he was trying to run a 3-cone in 3.66 to get the highest score when nobody, he was there at the end still trying to do it. You know,
those are the guys I want.
Yeah. Crushing his interviews too. I mean, he's a dog. He had this routine. He roomed in the hotel with his roommate, Jalen Polk. Mm-hmm. And they were to bed early, up early, you know, in the morning, had a morning regimen where they worked out, went to the combine, did their thing. You know, all of it was strictly business and disciplined and regimented.
Right.
I mean, and then the disparity was that Marvin Harrison Jr. walks in like a ghost. Apparently goes to speak to like six or seven teams.
Yep.
As a has his slot in the to speak to the media and doesn't show up.
Right. Turns around and walks out the door.
I mean, a guy who's a top five pick is not interested in talking to the media. I mean, you're not even interested in that part.
You're absolutely right.
Work out because he's still rehabbing off the injury.
Yeah.
But he spoke to the media at length and made a presence of himself. I mean, I know people are saying it's no big deal. I wouldn't want to speak to the media either. This is the NFL. The media is a major component.
It's a media-driven league.
Right. And here's the other thing that bothers me about that. Imagine this. If he went to the combine, he could have blown everyone away to the point of all the top teams now are like, how can we pass on this guy?
Right. So yeah, make the Patriots decision that much tougher.
Right. Or even at the top, the Bears wait another year.
Mm-hmm.
We'll stick with Fields. Wait another year.
Mm-hmm.
And because this guy's just too good to pass up, right?
Right.
But instead, playing this so coy and not wanting to run for anybody, and I don't know if he will even in private, if he does private visits. But I would think if I were him, I'd want to dictate my stock.
Absolutely.
Like you said, show up and, get everyone all buzzing about
it. Yeah, I want everybody talking about me. I don't want everybody talking about a Dunce or neighbors or whoever.
Right. And not talking about me as being a ghost.
Right. They're talking about you, but they're not talking about the right things. They're still talking about them, but all the wrong reasons.
He's also said he's not interested in working out at the pro day.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody's going to see him run.
Right.
If that's the case. Right. So, and what I wanted to see on him was his three cone, because, that speaks to short area quickness and be able to win off if they ever had him in the slot. And that's where I want to see if he could be a factor for us over the middle.
Well, it seems you're going to have to worry two things about him. Are we to be concerned about his, physical traits, or do we have to be concerned about him being a prima donna or both?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, right. Exactly. I don't like those type of players at all. You're right. You're right.
Right. And everyone says that he's not a diva, not a prima donna. But the way he's handled this raises the question. I mean, hopefully he's not, but, so I'm going to pose you the same question that I asked you. Let's say the Vikings call the Cardinals at 4 and say, okay, we're going to give you 11, 23, and a player. Would you take it to come up to 4?
Who's going to be there at 11? Is Bowers there at 11? Probably not.
Maybe
he's there. Yeah.
Will one of the three receivers still be there? Probably not.
Adunze and Neighbors will be gone. Harrison is gone.
The player who interests me there, Paul, is Byron Murphy II out of Texas.
Texas, yep.
The defensive tackle who's like the most explosive inside player. So that wouldn't bother me in the least. I mean, because of the, and then at 23, you've got your hand, you can hand pick a wide receiver.
Right.
Many of those guys. I'll tell you what,
Brian Thomas is my favorite, late one.
It would not surprise me in the least if Brian Thomas becomes the best deep threat in this draft.
I agree 100%. He's one of my favorite players in this draft. I think he's so overlooked because he plays with Neighbors.
Right.
But, I mean, what do you have, 16 touchdowns this year? Is that what he had?
Yeah. And he played in their bowl game.
Yeah,
and he had two touchdowns in their bowl game,
mm-hmm.
which I thought, wow, look at this guy. I really love that kid. I love there's so many receivers I love down in that area. The kid from Georgia,
Worthy?
Ladd McConkey.
McConkey. A lot of talk about early second round on him. I know that the Pats were looking at him.
Right. We have the 35th pick. You have the 34th. So, we're both right in there in that area, too. You can get a great receiver. The receiver I really love, too.
Troy Franklin.
I love him. Yep.
Love him.
And I love Roman Wilson.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Michigan.
Oh, my God. He is just, I would describe him as effortless precision. I mean, you hardly even know he's running and he's going right past people. He's got great hands. He's a touchdown machine if you get him around the goal line. And the kid Leggett from South Carolina.
South Carolina, yep.
He's a Debo-esque. I mean, there's just so many good ones that...
you know, I'm a little worried about that kid, Worthy, that broke the combine 40 record there.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, ton of speed, no size really, but he kind of reminds me of, you know, is he Tyquan Thornton 2.0?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? You know, that
exactly.
All speed and nothing else.
Correct.
You know,
I don't think he's got the total package.
Right.
I mean, I think his teammate, Ad Mitchell, is probably a better prospect or safer prospect.
Yes, they definitely safer, yes.
But there are aspects of his game, too, that concern me a little bit. But he's explosive and he's got a good nose for the end zone. He scored some big touchdowns for them. Mm-hmm. Key situation. So, but that's why it's so enticing to me to move down, because I mean, if you ended up with Thomas at 23, I feel like you could get the best defensive tackle in the draft and possibly the best deep threat in the draft too.
He's in my top five. I love him. Love Thomas. But let me ask you this, Walter, real quick.
Yeah.
Everything goes right. What is your absolute best case scenario? Who do you like? What do you like the Cardinals to do in the draft?
Well, I love Bowers, so that's my end of Dunze. Those two have separated themselves with me. I love players who are dogs, you know? I mean, in all aspects. And I mean, I watched so much Georgia tape, and you did. I mean, you have too. You've seen, nobody has missed them over the last 5 years. I mean, and I have never seen Bowers take a playoff. Never once. He just plays full tilt the whole time. That's why, like a guy like, you know, Will Shipley from Clemson?
Yep.
The running back. Love that guy. I mean, he runs like McCaffrey. You know, he's just won't go down. Never seen him take a playoff.
Yeah, I saw a lot of him 2 years ago. I didn't get to see too much of him this year.
Yeah, well, they've declined some, but he was good again this year. But
yeah,
but then you have when you know, in Adunze, oh man, I just love his football character. Love how he gets after it. He's just so aggressive. Those guys don't leave me with any question marks. And, you know, I just think as a system fit, I'd be so fascinated if they had Bowers opposite McBride. I think it would be unstoppable, particularly on third downs. I don't know how you cover both of them. I mean, I'm just fantasizing about running them on crossing mesh patterns. I mean, I just don't think. I don't know how you're going to cover that with linebackers and safeties. And then if people have to drop their, you know, the Bears, when we played the Bears, they took Jalen Johnson out of the secondary to cover McBride.
Yep.
You know, now that compromised them in other areas that unfortunately the Cardinals didn't exploit well enough. But when you drop a corner down onto a tight end, that screws, you know, that can screw up your whole defense, particularly on the back end.
Mm-hmm.
So, Yeah, I mean, but I'm conditioning myself. There's only one player the Cardinals have ever drafted who I wanted, and that was Kyler Murray.
Yeah.
So
I hear you.
And now I question that.
Question that as well, right?
Hopefully he is on his way back to being the Kyler that we saw early in 2021, because he was pretty special then. And, you know, a lot of things got in the way since then. We'll see, because he's in the building working hard every day. I was impressed with how he handled himself this past year. And so I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful he's got me kind of back on his side, because of, you know, now he finally, Paul, seems to have a little sense of humility that I think every player needs.
Absolutely.
I mean, when the Cardinals were 7-0, he told the New York Times, I don't need to watch film because I have this innate ability to see things before they happen. And that didn't go over. I mean, and then a year later, we're getting a homework clause in his contract. The frick. I mean, and that would just blew up in everyone's faces. That was like a rubber cigar.
Oh, I mean,
that was just awful. That whole thing, the whole thing.
Keep that to yourself. Keep that to yourself.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so, but I'm encouraged by your thoughts on Marvin Harrison Jr. And I would be excited if they took him. I'd be excited for the Cardinal fans who've been on this for a whole year. What I didn't like was them lobbying for the team to lose to get him. That never
seems like a lot of teams' fan bases get that like that.
Yeah,
everybody was doing it here. Got to keep losing. Got to keep losing. Even I was guilty of that sometimes. You know, just keep losing. Keep losing.
Yeah, and it's too bad that it kind of works that way. But here was my thing, Paul. I mean, they hired. I wasn't happy with the hire they made of Gannon to begin with. I thought he was too young and not qualified enough yet. Like, I'd want to see more of him as a coordinator. And the minute he gets to Arizona, he says, I wouldn't have accepted the job if they asked me to call the defense. And I'm like, what?
Really?
Yeah. I mean, so then he hires Nick Raelis, 30 years old. We have the youngest coaching staff in the NFL now. There are no veteran coaches on the staff.
Right.
And this is what I understand about Monty Osifort. So you hire the youngest staff and then proceed to, you know, lose all these games. What does that do for the perception of that staff? And, you know, in the present and moving forward. I mean, we were 32nd in the league in defense and defensive DVOA. With a defensive-minded head coach who wanted nothing to do with calling the defense.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, that's when he was hired. You know, I mean, that was a condition of his hiring.
Right.
To his credit, he's done really well with Kyler. Mm-hmm. So people are all excited about that. And I think that, he sets a positive tone in the building and has some good energy. So that's positive. But if our defense continues to play as it did last year, I mean, I don't know how you can keep him. You know, I mean, especially as a defensive-minded head coach. But they've made some signings on defense. They were the worst team in the NFL stopping the run. We did sign a couple tackles, although sort of mid-level tackles that I guess think the Cardinals think they've got something special going with.
Right.
And they probably overpaid, but like Bilal Nichols and Justin Jones were the two. And they got your boy, Mac Wilson.
Yeah, my boy. Yep. Decent player. I mean, all right, but, you know. But yeah, we shipped him out and brought in Taki Taki to replace
him. Yeah, that's right. Yes, you did.
Can I ask you a question real quick, Walter?
Yeah.
Your views on the Patriots coaching staff changes.
Well, I think Van Pelt's a good hire. He too is going to bring a very similar offense. You're going to see a lot of 12, 13 personnel, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You're going to see an emphasis on the running game. Did you guys, is Zeke Elliott still on the Pats?
He is not. They brought in Antonio Gibson.
I like him. That's a good pickup.
Yeah.
I bring Zeke back. I thought he was a plus.
He played great. He played great when Stevenson went down.
Right. They're going to need a big year from Stevenson. But I think that, you know, and re-signing your Michael, what's his name? Owanu. Yeah. Was huge. I mean, Cardinal fans were pissed. That was one of the targets we want. Everyone around the league wanted it.
I mean, with the amount of cap space we have, it had to be done. Can't let your best lineman walk away.
Right. Yep. But I'm really impressed, Paul, that they kept Uche.
Mm-hmm.
And he turned down like a, you know.
Yeah, he turned like down 2-15, I heard.
2-15, yep.
Yeah.
And I heard he got one offer for 1 year over 10.
That's impressive that he must see something here because not very often 25-year-old guys turn down more money.
Right. And that's the thing is you re-signed all your best guys.
Yep. Brought back everybody. Hunter Henry came back. You know, I mean, I was happy.
Kendrick Bourne. I love
Kendrick. Yeah, Kendrick Bourne's great. I mean, not a number one or two. I think he's a three, but he was so good for us till he got hurt last year.
Right. Yep. And Smith-Schuster?
Oh, yeah, he's great.
He's back?
Yeah.
Right? Didn't he resign?
He's back, yeah. They can't. No, he was signed this year anyway. He's got a $12 million dead money hit, so he wasn't going anywhere.
Yeah.
DeMario Douglas, I mean, I think he's going to be a player, man. We stole him last year.
Yeah. And then now in the draft, you're going to add to that position.
Yep.
You know, it would be interesting to see. I've always liked Jacoby Brissett. I thought he played really well for the Browns
mm-hmm.
in 2022.
Mm-hmm.
Before Watson came back.
He's got familiarity with Van Pelt. So
correct.
He needs to get in there. He's going to know the offense, you know.
Correct. And I'm still a big fan of the quarterback. Gosh, I'm doing my
best.
Bailey Zappe.
Bailey Zappe.
Oh, Zappe. Yeah.
Yeah, I wanted him for the Cardinals, and he surprised me last year that he was as off as he was in some of the games, because I've never seen him quite like that,
mm-hmm.
and that does concern me. But I think in the right system with the right coach, you know, he could help. I don't know if he's a QB1 in the league, and you're going to draft a quarterback. And I heard they might just release Zappe, but
that's what I'm hearing here is he might not have a job for much longer.
Yeah, now that we've got Desmond Ridder and we drafted Clayton Tune, you know, otherwise I would be lobbying to pick him up, Zappe, because I fell in love with his tape at Western Kentucky. Oh my God,
he could sling it there.
I mean, totally dealing. And
6,000 yards in a season.
I mean, he's everything that Brock Purdy is. I mean, as a quarterback, everything, except that he didn't have the guys around him like Purdy
right,
does.
Right.
And if there's one subtle nuance difference is he needs to learn to float like Purdy does to buy time in the pocket, the way Brady just mastered it. Yep. Absolutely mastered it. Well, once he does, I think he'd be really good because he can pull the trigger. But yeah, I was really impressed that you got all your good guys, the best guys back, plus
Kyle Duggar.
Kyle Duggar. Exactly. I mean, I love the and Anthony.
Everett Jennings, yep.
Yeah, Jennings, they just redid. I love him.
Yeah,
I mean, they got a lot of just really good ballers on defense.
Yeah, I mean, defense was not the problem last year. That was certainly for sure. I mean,
right.
I think they're going to be fine there. If they just, I think it's some semblance of offensive consistency, they'll be okay.
Yeah, Christian Barmore.
He's a stud.
Absolute stud. Mm-hmm. Love your linebackers. They're going to be really good on defense, and I think if they run the ball, you're going to be in a lot of close games.
Yep. Take some pressure off. Pressure off. You know, the kid that's back there.
Yep. Tough shoes for Gerard Mayo to fill, obviously, but mm-hmm. The players, I think it's a real testament to him that all these players wanted to stay.
And I think that's the reason that, you know, Uche took less money and all these guys are coming back. I think he has a lot to do with it.
Right. Exactly. Yep. So what other guys in the draft are you hoping the Patriots come away with?
Not so much anyone in particular. We need another wide receiver. That's a must. That's a second round or third. You know, we need a line help. Still need line help. That was the worst part. You know, those are the two worst parts of the team: receiving, offensive line. So I'd be happy with a second and third round receiver / offensive lineman after, you know, whatever quarterback we take in the first.
Yeah. So, and the good news, Paul, is it's the same. You know, the depth at wide receiver and O line is really good in this draft.
Best in years. Yep.
Yep. So, and it works in your favor. I'm pretty excited. Let's turn to Kyle. Kyle. So we did our mock. We had, Caleb going first to the Bears, Daniels going to the Commanders, right into the arms of Cliff Kingsbury, who I love. Then at three, we had the Patriots taking Drake May, and then four, it's Marvin Harrison Jr.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the batting order you foresee, or do you have a fly in the ointment there?
I am not certain that Daniels is going to end up being pick two, but free agency does make me feel pretty confident that the first three picks are all going to be quarterbacks and that none of the teams lower in the draft are going to be able to jump into the top three past, say, Chicago, Washington, and New England. I mean, the decisions that those teams made make it pretty clear that they're going quarterback. Washington has basically no quarterbacks on the active roster now, because I thought they were going to keep Sam Howell. So clearly they are staying at two and picking a quarterback. Clearly Chicago's staying at one and picking a quarterback, because God, nobody wants Justin Fields. I understand some teams not wanting to go the Fields option and like going for Russell Wilson or going for Kirk Cousins or whatever, but it's just weird that nobody wants Justin Fields at all. But yeah, those two are going to be quarterbacks. Patriots are going to be a quarterback. I would assume they're not going to start the year with Jacoby Brissett as the starter. He got backup money. They're viewing him as the backup. So yeah, that's pretty much how I view it at this point. It's going to be those three quarterbacks in some order, and then the Cardinals get to pick whoever they want at the top of the draft, and I assume that's going to be Marvin Harrison Jr., because Marvin Harrison Jr. is the best wide receiver to enter the draft in many, many years. I mean, it's the first time, at least in the last 7 or 8 years, that he's been the number one overall prospect in the entire class at the wide receiver position. So I would presume that's going to be the pick for the Cardinals, and I don't think the Cardinals should be upset or disappointed or anxious about Marvin Harrison Jr., because, you know, we've talked about it before, Walter. I'm not as ring the alarm bells on Marvin Harrison Jr. not showing up to the combine or doing stuff like that. It's just
right.
How do you get better than number one? He's already number one in the class. His fate is predetermined. He's going to be a top five pick no matter what, because if it's not the Cardinals, somebody's going to want to get him at the top of the draft. And I don't think that's anything that's in his control at this point, but I think Arizona's going to end up with their receiver of choice. Although their free agent moves make me more convinced than before that the Cardinals are going to take a receiver, but less certain that the receiver they're going for is Marvin Harrison Jr. in the sense that they cleared out Rondale Moore. And maybe that's just finally putting the faith in Greg Dortch that you've been hoping for like 2 years, that someone in the Cardinals offense will put faith in Greg Dortch. But the decision to move off of Moore and Hollywood Brown, I thought was interesting. Maybe they're in the market to take two receivers in this class. I know that Zach Pascal's still on the team, so maybe there's still some Zach Pascal faith within the organization. We thought he was going to get cut on Wednesday when the new league year started, and he's still around, but right. The fact that both Hollywood Brown and Rondale Moore are gone made me kind of stop and pause and think, are they going to go? Are they more interested in an Adunze, or maybe they're going to take two receivers at some point here? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think the Pats will too. I think we're both in a similar situation in terms of wide receivers in adding there. And, you know, and in a wide receiver rich draft, and the Cardinals have, let's see, they have 3 third rounders. So they have 2 first rounders, 1 second round, and 3 third rounders. So you got a lot of flexibility there. Paul, what's your draft situation with the Pats?
One in each round.
One, that's it, right?
Yep.
So. Well, that's good because you're not missing any rounds, and right. So you get 4 really good picks right off the bat in top 100 picks,
right? Or
close to it, so that's good. Right. Great
point about Kyle Fields, by the way. I mean, Justin Fields, by the way, Kyle.
Yeah,
that no one wants him, even though.
I'm shocked, honestly. I thought there would be multiple teams that would want a piece of them.
Well, here's the thing. I came away in the, you know, the Bears were on a number of Monday night or night games this year. I mean, they put a spanking on a couple teams on night games that were national performances where I thought Fields was dynamic in those games. I mean, he was clicking with DJ Moore. He was running for first downs. I mean, when we played him in Chicago, he dominated the first half against the Cardinals. They ended up beating the Cardinals by like 10. Mm-hmm. I mean, not that that's, you know, the Cardinals defense was, you know, worse than the league in certain things, but the way that he played, I mean, he played a near flawless first half. They scored touchdowns on almost every possession. They beat the Vikings down the stretch. They beat the Packers down the stretch.
Yep.
I mean, in really good, you know, like impressive fashion with Fields playing good football. So, yeah, it surprises me too because, I mean, he's a real weapon, a dual threat weapon. I mean, he runs the ball like, whoa. He's kind of a baller. I mean, he's going to try to get as many yards as he can. And I thought he improved his passing. I really did. So, I mean, I thought all along they might just stay put and or trade down and get a haul again and, you know, take the best player they could. What doesn't make sense to me is why you keep Matt Eberflus, the defensive mind and head coach, and fire your offensive guy, who I thought was making progress.
Yep.
To bring in a new offensive guy and with knowing you're going to draft a quarterback at number one. If think that was the thinking, why don't you get the best offensive guy candidate for head coach and pair him up with Williams So you have that locked in, right?
Because Walter, that would make too much sense. And this is the Chicago Bears. The Chicago Bears have never matched timelines at like any point in their entire franchise's history. It's always GM, then a quarterback, then a coach, then GM, then quarterback, then coach. They never align the timelines ever. That's just Chicago's whole thing.
Right. I mean, with the number one pick, every offensive guy in the league probably would be lined up. I mean, they might have gotten Ben Johnson out of Detroit, although he's kind of a strange duck. I don't know what's going on with him mentally. But
you think they have their choice at offensive-minded coaches? I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and it was weird, too, that this year five defensive-minded head coaches out of the seven teams.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, whoa. I mean, but, you know, everybody's a copycat, right? Who do we have to thank for all that? DeMeco Ryans. Everybody wants a little something of that.
Yep.
You know, like
he's got both sides going now.
Yeah. And, you know, some of those guys sort of fit that mold, like Raheem Morris, I love. The kid McDonald from the Ravens. It might be a little too soon to jump to head coach, which I would be concerned about there. Only 1 year in Baltimore, but it was a beauty.
2 years.
Kind of like what Staley did in the Rams and had one or two great years and then got the Chargers job, I think, too soon to be a head coach. But they would have had – so it looks to me now – now you're going to be starting a rookie and starting all over again. How does, if they don't win, how does Eberflus last another year as head coach? He doesn't. Now you're going to change the whole coaching staff, right? It's just bizarre to me.
I think the question is win enough, because I think they're going to be pretty good next year, but pretty good of 8-9 has gotten coaches fired in recent years. It's just, it's not necessarily will they win a ton of games, is just will they win enough? I have no idea what the standard is, and that's what makes it super confusing to figure out for Chicago. I have idea what they view the standard of success for this year, because they're not going to be at the top of the draft next year. They have added so much talent over the last 12 months.
I agree.
Yeah, unless the quarterback is not who they thought he'd be, and that's a big question mark. Because as a rookie, you never know. Could he be, you know, have the same kind of success that Stroud did? Possibly. But is that likely? Probably not. But he's surrounded by, he's got a, you know, a pretty decent offensive line. And he's got, you know, DJ Moore. He's got Cole Kmet. And
now, weirdly, Keenan Allen.
And now, Keenan Allen. Weirdly. Good way to put that. Weirdly, Keenan Allen.
Yeah.
For a fourth rounder.
Yeah. I won't go on the Chargers rant today, but it's just, I don't understand why they just toss away franchise Ring of Honor players like it's nothing.
Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, so, all right, Kyle, because give us your prediction right now. Top four.
I'll go with the whatever people have been saying for most of the time. So I'll go Williams, May, Daniels, and Marvin Harrison Jr. 1, 2, 3, 4 off the bat. Okay. And then I originally thought Chargers would take best defensive player available on the board, but after everything they've done, they probably go offensive line, I would imagine. Considering
I think they go wide receiver. They just got rid of Williams and Allen, so I think they might take a receiver.
I don't think so, only because it would appear that I don't know what exactly the Chargers want to do on offense, but in the Greg Roman style offense that I think they're going to try and run, I would assume they're going to try and beef up the offensive line a bit. But you're right, they only have like two receivers at this point. It's Joshua Palmer and Quentin Johnston. They have literally no receivers other than that at this point. But Yeah, I don't know what direction the Chargers want to go because I didn't foresee them giving up. I imagine that before we get to the draft, they'll add two more receivers. I just don't know which ones left on the board that they will go pick up. Maybe Odell Beckham Jr. and call it someone else.
Well, their left tackle is Rashawn Slater, and he's pretty dang good. So, and he's graded pretty well. Their right tackle is Trey Pipkins. And I saw his grade. It didn't look too bad to me, but that's where you would want probably to make an upgrade. But that you can do at a later round. I mean, the guy I love for right tackle is Talese Fuaga from Oregon State. He is a stud. He's like Wirfs. He's like Wirfs on a pogo stick. I mean, yeah. He's got bounce. I mean, he's like Rolo the Dancing Bear. I mean, he is like, I just love his game. And someone's going to, I think, absolutely love him. But
yeah, I just don't know what direction they're going to go, because I thought they would have taken best defensive player available, but then they came out here and held on to all their defensive players. So they still need a corner, but I don't know if they reach this early for a corner. I don't know.
Yeah, right. No, I think you're right. It's an offensive player. It wouldn't shock me if they took Bowers, knowing Harbaugh and wanting ballers on there. Plus, they don't have a tight end. Gerald Everett got signed by somebody. They don't have a tight end. Chargers fans that I've talked to are like, would love Bowers, but maybe not now. That was when they had Keenan Allen
and Williams,
which, by the way, Paul, Mike Williams to New England, I'm hearing, is a possibility. What do you think?
I'd like it if I knew he was healthy.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Big injury, you know.
Although he injured it early last year, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So the rehab, he could be back by training camp, possibly. If that's
28, 29. How old is he? Probably 20, late 20s.
Yeah, actually, I think he's younger than that. Wait a minute. What do you got, Kyle? Michael Williams.
Yeah, he's 29.
That's what I thought, yeah.
Right, yeah, 29.
He's 29, because he was with the Chargers for, I think, 7 years, I want to say.
Yeah. I think he's going to be good for another 5-6 years. He's just too good. If he can stay healthy, that's
stay healthy, right?
But before we go, I want to give props to Kyle. He did his this Cardinals off season plan, and he hit a home run with Jonah Williams. Called it, signed, sealed, and delivered it this week. I mean, and then went straight to Twitter to announce it. Kudos.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. And little did I know before free agency started that every single contract was going to be basically a 1 or a 2 year deal, but I thought they would sign him for 3 or 4 years, even if it's a 4 year contract that's really a 2 year contract. But they got him for 2 years, $30 million, which is pretty dang good given the state of affairs in free agency this year. I mean, basically everyone signed a 1 or 2 year deal, but I know they were kind of going back and forth. I saw your story, Walter, where they were talking about at the press conference whether he would play left or right tackle, and he said he would play either position, whatever the coaches wanted him to. If the Cardinals were making the right call, that's a true right tackle. They tried him at left. Didn't work out the way they wanted it to. They brought in Orlando Brown, who's a true left tackle. If Jonah Williams is a true right tackle, now the Cardinals might mess it up and put Harris and him at the wrong positions, but that's a true right tackle signing. And I believe this precludes Harris moving over to the left side, like you were talking about, because Jonah Williams is a true right tackle, and they would be playing both of them out of position if they went the reverse.
Well, I don't think it matters. To me, it doesn't matter either way. One of those two is going to end up at right tackle for 2 years in a row, which will help whoever that is. The other thing is that in 2021 in the Bengals Super Bowl run. Jonah Williams has 74.5 PFF grade. It was by far his best year as a pro. He gave up 8 sacks, but you know who's in his division? Who was in his division? 3 of the top 7 rushers in the league. TJ Watt, Myles Garrett, and then it was, Matthew Judon. So, I mean, hello. That's playing them twice a year, you know. And I thought he played really, really well. The problem in 2022 was, and people aren't paying enough attention to this, was he gave up 12 sacks, but he dislocated each one of his knees on separate occasions. I mean, he was trying to play through, you know, some really painful injuries. And to his credit, you know, he was trying to get the Bengals back to a Super Bowl. And then they couldn't resist signing Orlando Brown. They had, you know, and so that became a necessity. If they're going to sign Brown, they had to assure him to play left tackle. So they thought, you know, that Jonah could switch over to right tackle. He had a decent there this year there at right tackle. It was nowhere near what he did in 2021. But I kind of get what you're saying. I mean, I'm fine if they switch. I wanted Paris Johnson Jr. on the left side to begin with. But what screwed me up, and this I'll make this for my defense, is all we've been hearing this offseason from the Cardinals is we prefer to keep Paris at right tackle. So screw with my head. So if you prefer to keep Paris at right tackle and you just signed Jonah Williams, who wanted to be traded because he was so pissed they moved him to right tackle, and he had multiple suitors, right? He said he had 4 or 5 teams that he was negotiating with. I can't imagine him not choosing a team that would play him at left tackle where he wants to play. So, I mean, imagine, I think he dodged the question and he had to. He just said, I'll play wherever they want. But I think, I think he had some assurances.
The signing was made with the idea in mind that he would be playing left tackle, you hypothesize.
That's what I'm guessing, because he chose the Cardinals and he had multiple offers. And I don't think every team was like right tackle. I think the need is out there. He could have dictated terms there. Now, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he said, you know what? I kind of like it over at right tackle. After all, after playing it a year. So I don't know. But I don't think it really matters. Either way, I'd be fine with it, whichever way they want to go with it. There's a next-gen stat that compared his 2022 year at left tackle to his 2023 year at right tackle, where he gave up fewer quick pressures and stuff like that. So there's reason to believe. But as I argued back, that's cherry picking, because 2022, he was physically, you know, trying to get through knee injuries and, you know, trying to help the Bengals get back to the Super Bowl. So, yeah, I mean, and it was his roughest season, and he gave up 12 sacks for sure. It was not his best, but I think there were mitigating circumstances. And so I asked, could we get the Gen X stats on comparing, you know, the 21 season to 23? That might be a different story. But I mean, his PFF grades in 21 were dramatically different than what they were in
Yeah, in 21, he was the best offensive lineman on what was perhaps the worst offensive line in the NFL. Because remember, that was the year they went to the Super Bowl, but Burrow was getting sacked like 9 times a game and getting pressured like 16 or 17. But he was the best offensive lineman on a truly terrible offensive line in 2021.
Correct. That's another factor, too, is he's playing on a terrible line. And every team is throwing the kitchen sink at him to get to Burrow. So
yeah, they just figured out just blitz him. That's the way to go about it. But yeah. I'm glad that my prognostication came true, because Jonah Williams grew up like about 15 minutes away from where I live up here in Sacramento. So it's cool that he's back there. And him and Jake Browning both played at the same time at Folsom Lake High School over here in Sacramento. So last year it was kind of a cool story that Browning was the quarterback for half the season and he was the offensive lineman out there in Cincinnati. So cool that Jonah Williams is now going to the Cardinals like we prognosticated a couple weeks ago.
Well, and you won't believe this synchronicity. You won't believe it, Kyle. Guess where Jonah Williams and his fiance are living right now?
Where is that?
Hint, hint, hint.
Hmm.
Where did you just go on vacation?
Oh, would that be San Diego?
That it would be San Diego.
Huh.
You know, your hometown. So the synchronicity. And he was saying at the press conference yesterday, he was like, hey, I'm really excited because it's a short plane ride to San Diego from here, from Arizona. Geographically, this was desirable for me as well. So pretty cool, huh? The San Diego kid and the Sacramento connection. You got it all. See, you must have been feeling like this like mystical aura about him.
Just a pretty good right tackle, you know? They picked up a pretty good right tackle, and now they don't have to worry about picking linemen early in the draft. They could still use some depth pieces, but they don't have to invest a premium pick in an offensive lineman here in the draft.
That's good. That's good. All right. So, Paul, back to you.
Yes.
Back to you, Paul. All right. So, if you had your druthers, I want to throw the question back to you. We're going to end on that. What do you want to see the Patriots do at 3?
I would like to see them take the wide receiver. But that's me.
Yep.
I'm not sold on either one of them, on May or Daniels. I think they both have a lot of, you know, obviously have a lot of, you know, amazing traits, but I'm just not sold on them, you know. I'm really not. I want the sure thing, and I think Harrison is the sure thing this year.
Yep. Now that just raised the blood pressure of every Cardinals fan who's been wanting for Harrison for a whole year and wanting to lose every game for it. For him. I don't blame you. And you know, I'd be tempted to take McCarthy even at 4 because I believe he is he's number one quarterback for me when I look at the tape and look at the intangibles and his mental toughness and what it takes for a quarterback to win. I mean, when we look at the playoffs and stuff, when we see the quarterbacks in playoffs, I mean, look at Mahomes. Look at his focus.
Mm-hmm.
Look at his tough. I mean, 2 years ago when he played through that high ankle sprain. I mean, who does that? I mean, you have to take it mentally to a completely different level to win, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, Matthew Stafford did it in that Super Bowl a couple of years ago. I mean, Brady won it the year before. I mean, there's something about the mental aspect of playing quarterback in the NFL, of fighting through adversity after adversity, pressure after pressure, and endure it all and be still standing at the top of the mountain. And I think McCarthy has those intangibles. But like you, I understand the reluctance to take him at 3 because nobody's taking him at 3, supposedly. Right. But
I'm dropping back. No problem. You know, it's totally fine with that.
Although you can't guarantee
he's going to be there. Right?
Correct. I mean, Harbaugh could trade Herbert Get a haul. That's what the Bears are going to do. They're going to get Herbert. I mean, they just got Keenan Allen. It's in the stars.
I would absolutely do it. I would give up the one pick for. I would give up the one pick and more for Herbert if they had the option to.
Yeah, and then Harbaugh can be the heartbreaker for everyone. He takes Marvin Harrison Jr. at number one and J.J. McCarthy at number. Number five. Oh my God! Imagine that happening. People will go crazy. Oh my goodness. Oh man. If I were the Bears, I'd do that. Herbert, number one.
Of course.
Over Caleb Williams.
Yes, of course. But you know who's not going to do that? The Chargers.
But you don't know Harbaugh. I mean, he just traded away Keenan Allen and cut Mike Williams.
Yeah, but the Chargers and Bears are two of the worst run organizations in football. Maybe they both agree to just take each other's problems on, but I would love it if they did something silly like that. If the Chargers went a trio of Marvin Harrison Jr., JJ McCarthy, Blake Corum, and Roman Wilson.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all Michigan from there. You just know. And Chris Jenkins, defensive tackle. Guaranteed, if he's got a crack at him. Plus, our Massachusetts boy from Everett, Mike Sarin, still love him, huh? Slot corner. Man, that kid's a baller from Everett High. Wow. I knew his coach really well, John DiBiaso. He's now at Catholic Memorial. He was basketball coach at Everett when I was basketball coach at Arlington. And we played in the same league. He was a great basketball coach too, but man, Sarnstil, what a player. He's diminutive as all hell, but he plays huge. He's going to be a steal for anyone who takes him. I bet the Patriots have a really high grade on him, but I'm not sure if they can afford to take him where he needs to go. Due to their needs, as Paul outlined. So, Kyle, any parting thoughts?
Yeah, I know we didn't talk much about the defensive side of the free agent coin today with the Cardinals. I know you've talked about it a bunch in your stories and your tweets and things of those sorts, but I thought it was an interesting strategy for the Cardinals to just kind of add some depth, but no player that I feel like is, say we get to 20, not this year, but get to next year. I don't think any player they signed is really locked in to be a starter beyond this next season, which is an interesting use of resources when they had spent basically close to 2 years getting in this position to sign some people. They got a lot of names. I mean, LJ Collier's back, Murphy Bunting, Nichols, Jones, Mac Wilson. They brought in a lot of names, but I don't really feel great about any of them being long-term fixes for some of their problems, which I guess maybe that's where you go to the draft to address it. But I thought it was an interesting strategy for the Cardinals, but they only had but so many options. I think it was good that if you are going to start spending money like that, you bring in like five players who add depth that they didn't really have last year. But we'll see what happens. I mean, the money that they were saving up to allocate to Marco Wilson just went to Sean Murphy Bunting. And I'm not sure if that's a dramatic difference in production that they're going to get, but we'll see what happened. Maybe they had to pay some of that Jaguar tax that we were talking about. Maybe a couple of those signings were what they were because they had to pay a premium for even second tier or third tier free agents. But we'll see what ends up happening. But they have depth at a number of positions, but no one that I think is a long-term fix for the position they were brought in to play.
Yep. The big difference was this year, rather than last year, they were signing guys to three-year deals. Bilal Nichols, 3 years, with an average of 7 middle of the season. Justin Jones, 3 years, average of $10 million. Sean Murphy Bunting got 8.5 a year for 3 years. Mac Wilson got like $4 million a year for 3 years. So I guess Monty really wanted to make sure he's not in this position every year, having to reload. And they're all solid players. None of them are in anybody's top 100 free agents. The only signing that they had was the Little Rock special with Jonah Williams. Williams was 55th, ranked 55th on PFF and number 30 on CBS. So that was the only consensus top 100 pick, free agent pick that they signed. And they got, you know, him for 2 years at 15 a year. So I kind of like that they did it that way. They did have to, you're right, it was the Jaguar tax, which means you got to overpay. But and those are under the radar guys that if they work out, they're going to make Monty look like a genius. But it could easily go the other way. I mean, Murphy Bunting didn't have a very good year last year in Tennessee. But Monty has connections in Tennessee where he was assistant GM. So somebody there must have, you know, put a notion in his ear of how good this kid could be.
Yeah, and I don't want to pretend like they didn't need cornerback help. They did need to add another corner. They still need to add another one in the draft. I just, you know, they gave Murphy Bunting essentially a 3-year contract that is a 2-year contract. So they have made a 2-year commitment to him. He'll be on the team most likely for 2 years. Right. Same thing with Justin Jones. It's just, like you said, they paid top 100 free agent money to guys who you don't regard as top 100 guys.
Right. Well, I don't think it was top 100 money. Only the, you know, in today's NFL with these salaries, you know, I think the only one that was the one that the two that was, well, none of them are really close to top money at their positions.
No. But top 100 means, you know, for a defensive tackle, you're in the top 15 of highest paid players at the position, which is, now Justin Jones isn't top 15 at the position, but you are right. They made a couple of commitments for multiple years. Mac Wilson won. That's a 1-year deal that says it's a 3-year deal, but Jones, Murphy Bunting, Nichols, those are players that they've committed multiple years of value to. And even if they aren't starters coming up the following year, it's still good that they have depth pieces at many of these positions, even if
why are you saying Mac Wilson's really only a 1-year deal?
Because all of the guarantees, which it's not a lot of guarantees, it's a $6.4 million in guarantees. The guarantees are majority paid out in the first year, and then there's a $3 million dead cap hit in 2023. The best example I can point to is if you look at the Kirk Cousins contract with the Falcons, it's a 4-year deal on paper, but 90% of the guarantees are paid out in the first 2 years, which essentially makes it a 2-year contract, at which point they will either guarantee more money to Cousins or move on from Cousins. So like that's a 4-year deal that's really a 2-year deal. The Mac Wilson deal is a 3-year deal that is in essence a 1-year deal because most of the guarantees are paid out in the front. Same thing with DJ Dallas. They signed DJ Dallas to a 3-year deal, but all of his guarantees are paid out in the first year. After that, yes, all of his guarantees are in the first year. And then if they were to move on from him after that, it's a $66,000 dead cap hit, which is essentially the league minimum.
Okay, that just took some excitement out, particularly from Mac Wilson, because that for many of us, that's one of the ones we really love the best. So,
yeah.
And the way he was talking yesterday about teaming up with Kaiser White in the middle there was really inspiring. So, we'll have to keep an eye on that. But
yeah, and we'll see what happens. Maybe the Cardinals come back and want to bring him back after the first year of the contract, but It is very easy for them to just cut Mac Wilson and save money at the end of the first year.
Well, not if you're eating $3 million.
Yeah, if you're eating $3 million as opposed to a lower contract. Yeah, as opposed to paying out $5 million, or you know, if you have a willing trade partner or something like that. But
you still have them under contract. You've already paid out the guarantees, but you would expect them to stay on the contract. So you know, you've already paid them most of the money. Then you know, you're getting them cheaper for years 2 and 3.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with that. But most of the guarantees are paid out in the front for him, as opposed to the other contracts, Murphy Bunting, Nichols, and Jones. Those are longer term commitments, more guaranteed money in the contracts spread out over multiple years. Those players will definitely be on the team for multiple years.
All right. Okay. Last thought was Dane Brugler. Do you know who he is? He's an NFL pundit who does a great mock draft every year. This just in, interesting text from an NFL scout. Quote, could this be the first time we get quarterbacks drafted 1, 2, 3, 4? And Brugler writes, it would be very tough for Arizona to trade away from MHJ at number 4, but Cardinals GM Monty Osifort moved around in last year's top 10. That brings credence to J.J. I mean, the 4 has to be J.J. McCarthy, right? What do you think, Paul?
It would have to be. I don't see how else it could be, you know?
Right?
Way too early for anyone else.
I would think so. But that's the testament to how much he's rising up draft boards. And I would be really fascinated to see where, you know, the GMs are ranking him in the top 4 quarterbacks. So, I mean, wouldn't it be bizarre if the Bears took him at 1? I mean, I don't see that happening necessarily. But I also heard last week the Bears sent a whole bunch of coaches down to meet with Bo Nix. So that's an interesting, you know.
Second round type of guy.
Well, Bo Nix, well, they have a second first round pick already at like what, pick 9, Kyle?
7 or 9 or something.
Right. Seven. So they already have that. So if they pivoted and took Marvin Harrison Jr., they could still be in a position to take Nix and hang on to Fields and make it a competition. And see if Nix is there, Brock Purdy or something. I don't know. But now here's another report right now on the internet. There's talk that the Giants are planning on taking quarterback J.J. McCarthy at pick number 6 in this year's draft. League sources spoke highly of McCarthy when polled by SNY. One high-ranking executive said he'll be a better pro than college player. Another general manager said that he has everything teams look for: size, athleticism, arm strength, accuracy, and playing in a pro-style offense.
I agree.
I think we were talking right on the cusp of some really interesting movement with regard to J.J. McCarthy. I think some people are seeing what we're seeing, Paul. And if you did want him now, you probably couldn't trade past 5. So if that's the case, I mean, I think he is a fit with the Giants. I think, you know, Brian Daboll would love J.J. McCarthy, tell you the truth.
What they were thinking with Danny Dimes over there. I mean, they give him more money and...
Yeah,
they're a mess.
They are, aren't they? Oh my God. So, yeah. But, hey, listen, Paul, such great time having you here and your insights and on the Pats. And you're their go-to guy when it comes to the Pats. And, love to have you on again. Thanks you for joining us.
Walter, I appreciate it. Thank you to you too, Kyle. I really appreciate it, guys.
Thanks. So on behalf of Little Rock, Kyle Ledbetter, and myself, Cardinal fans, exciting times. Maybe one day we'll experience that red confetti of red rain coming down again, and that's why we call this red rain. So in the interim, may the red rain shower down on you into our red, red sea. Red rain.